Shalom and welcome back to Nach Online, brought to you by OU.org and www.shalom.com, where we are studying the book of Shmuel, the book of Samuel, and are about to begin our study of the third chapter, Perek Gimel, of Sefer Shmuel. The third chapter is going to be devoted nearly entirely to Shmuel himself, although what would seem to be the central part of the chapter really is away from Shmuel. We will see, we will discover that it is not. And within the context of this very brief chapter of 21 Psukim, we will see that several significant rhetorical tools employed by the text, employed by Tanakh, that will be utilized here and that will help us understand what is going on in the text and, believe it or not, help us understand the relationship between Shmuel and a very famous earlier Navi and a curious Midrash Chachamim. V'anar Shmuel mesharet et Adonai lifnei Eli, udvar Adonai haya yakar b'yimim ahem, ein chazon nifratz. So the first thing that we're told is that Shmuel was serving Hashem in the presence of Eli. Eli is his mentor. This is something we already saw in the second chapter. And in the meantime, the word of Hashem was very precious or rare in those days. There was not a lot of prophecy. Ein chazon nifratz, meaning prophecy was not common. So we get the sense now that there's a period in which God's Spirit is not manifest and not immanent among the people. We can already sense from that introduction a tension and apposition that on the one hand Shmuel is great and is wonderful, and he's, as we saw in the previous parak, Gamim Hashem, Gamim Anashim, and on the other hand Hashem's Spirit is not manifest here. We are waiting for these two to come together and to see some sort of a change. Vahim Bayomahu, and it was on that day, Ve'eli Shochev Bimukomo. Eli was sleeping in his place. Ve'inav Hechelu Chehot, his eyes were dimming. He was beginning to go blind. Lo Yuchal Lirot. This bit of foreshadowing is significant for what's going to happen later in the story. At this point, we don't understand why we're told that Eli is going blind. Ve'ner Elohim Teram Yichbet. The candle of God, which literally read means the menorah, had not yet gone out. Ushmuel shochev. So Shmuel was also sleeping. Behechal Adonai, ashesham aron Elohim. In the hechal, in the temple, of course that doesn't mean Shmuel was sleeping in the mikdash, but perhaps it's referring back to the ner Elohim term, yichbeh, behechal Hashem. But Shmuel is put in the middle there. And Shmuel is put in the middle because if you look at these two psukim, you can already see the apposition between Eli and Shmuel, which in the previous parak existed between Chofni Finchas on the one hand and Shmuel on the other. In the previous parak, it had to do with righteousness, with character, with Eli's sons being terrible and depraved and hurting people, and in the meantime Shmuel rising. Here we get a different kind of apposition, is that Eli's eyes are going dim, and in the pasuk that mentions Shmuel sleeping, we have the candle of God still lit, has not yet gone out, as if to say that the light that is disappearing from Eli is now stronger in the case of Shmuel, and that Shmuel is now the one being associated with being in the Mikdash and with the Aron, even though, of course, he's not sleeping there. That is the matzag, the exposition, the setup for this parak that will take us now through the next piece. The rest of the parak is made up really of three parts. One of them is the introduction to the prophecy, the next one is the prophecy, and then there is the epilogue to the prophecy. The introduction is by far the more interesting piece, but let's see. Vayikra Adonai al Shmuel vayomer hineni. Hashem called to Shmuel, and Shmuel said, Hineni, here I am. Now, remember what we learned in the first pasuk. There isn't a lot of prophecy going on. And we get the sense that Shmuel has never had prophecy. And so now when Hashem calls to him and says, Shmuel, Shmuel's response, Hineni, doesn't mean that he knows who he's talking to. Vayarotz el Eli. Shmuel got up and ran to Eli's bedside. Remember, Shmuel is the mentee, is the student, is the disciple of Eli, and such, if Eli calls him in the middle of the night, Shmuel will run to his bedside to help him out. And again, Eli's blindness is critical here because Shmuel may think Eli needs something and he can't see it. Vayomer hineni ki karatali. And Shmuel repeats the word and says, hineni, here I am, because you called me. Vayomer lo karati, shuv shchav, and Eli says back to him, I didn't call you, go back and lie down. Vayedach vayishkav. And Shmuel walked back, he didn't run back, he walked back and he went back to lie down. Now, what is each person thinking here? What is Shmuel thinking? What is Eli thinking? Eli may be thinking that Shmuel's hearing things. Eli may be thinking there's someone else in the Mishkan, he can't see after all. What is Shmuel thinking? Unclear. Vayosef Adonai kro od Shmuel, vayakom Shmuel vayelech Eli. So Hashem called Shmuel again, and Shmuel got up and walked to Eli. Didn't run. Why didn't he run? He's not as sure this time. Vayomer hinaniki karatali. I'm here because you called me. Vayomer lo karati vini shuv shchav. And he said, I did not call you, my son. Go back and lie down. Now notice that here he adds the words, my son. Why does he add that word in? Because he realizes that Shmuel is going to be feeling somewhat nervous, uncomfortable about the fact that now for a second time he's coming to wake Eli, or to come to his bedside, and Shmuel may himself not have as much confidence that whatever he's coming for is legitimate. And therefore, Eli, to calm him down, calls him Bini. We will see this happen again in the next parak in a very different context. Shmuel terem yadat Adonai, terem yigale elav dvar Adonai. And now the text tells us something that we perhaps intuited, but now can understand, that the reason that Shmuel is responding the way he is because he had never heard the word of Hashem, and Hashem's word had not been revealed to him. Vayosef Adonai kro Shmuel bashlishit. Now a third time Hashem calls him. Vayakum vayelech Eli, gomz to Eli again. Remember, niki karatali, same thing. You called me. Vayaven Eli ki Adonai kore lanar. Suddenly Eli now finally understood, not suddenly, but he finally understood that Hashem is calling the boy, and that's why this is all happening. So now, Vayomer Eli l'Shmuel, lech shchav, go back and lie down. Vayayim yikra elecha, if he calls to you again, v'amarta, then you should say the following, daber Adonai kishomei avdecha, Hashem speak, because your servant is listening. In other words, Eli is schooling him. This is how you respond when Hashem calls you. Vayelech Shmuel vayishkav bimkomo, and Shmuel went and he lay down in his place. Now, we know what's going to happen, but notice something curious, that up until now, in all of the reports that we got, Hashem called to Shmuel and said to him, Shmuel. That's the record that the text has. That he said to him, Shmuel. Did he really say Shmuel? As we see in this next pasuk, not necessarily. Vayavo Adonai vayetzav ekra kefam befam Shmuel Shmuel. And Hashem stood over him. He came and he stood over him and he cried and he called to him, like each time, Shmuel Shmuel. Chazal pick up on this double language, and it's famous Sifra at the beginning of Vayikra, that those that Hashem really loves, he calls to with the doubling the name. Avraham, Avraham, Yaakov, Yaakov, Moshe, Moshe, and Shmuel, Shmuel. And here's Shmuel, Shmuel. But if that's the case, that means that each time Hashem called him, he said Shmuel, Shmuel. So how come the text only has Shmuel once until now? That's something we'll talk about at the end of the parak. Vayomer Shmuel daber kishomei avdecha. And you notice that Shmuel did not exactly respond the way that Eli had told him to respond. He said, daber, without Hashem's name, kishomei avdecha. Speak, for your servant is listening, is the way he responded. Now, let's take a look at what we have so far, because it will be instructive. We are accustomed, and many of us are accustomed to reading Tanakh, the pieces of Tanakh that are narrative as stories. We're accustomed to reading it without paying much attention to issues like repetition of words, specific words, nuances, structure of the text, things of that sort. But we forget that Tanakh is also literature. Not only is it is literature which is Kodesh. It's literature which is divine. And as such, all of those nuances which a human author could put into his text, kal vachomer, how much more so the divine author is able to integrate into his text, to enhance the text, to embellish its meaning, to add to our understanding of the depth of what is going on. There is a very common occurrence that happens as a structure in Tanakh, which is conveniently called Shlosha V'Arba'a, the device of the three and four, where we have the prime example of this, of course, the beginning of Sefer Amos, Hashlosha Pishei Damesek, V'Alar Ba'alo Ashivenu. It is otherwise called N plus N plus 1, that the author will repeat a particular number and then one more. So, for instance, we have the occasions at the end of Mishlei, in the 30th chapter of Mishlei. Shlosha v'arba'a. There's three things that I can't, that are hateful, and four things the earth can't stand, etc. Three things are beyond me, and four things are beyond my comprehension. That kind of style. But that exists also within narrative, not as a saying, but as an occurrence, meaning that a certain thing will happen three times, and on the fourth time it'll be resolved. Couple of examples. In the very famous Mashal Yotam, the parable of the trees, it appears in the 9th chapter of Sefer Shoftim, where Yotam is telling the people of Shechem that they've made a terrible mistake in asking Avimelech to be their king. In his parable, which really does not fit the reality at all, he says that the trees all came to the olive tree and said, be our king, and then they came to the fig tree, and then they came to the grapevine, and then they came to the thorn bush. In other words, there were three trees, each of which rejected the position of being king of the trees, saying, I've got better stuff to do than be your king. Until finally the fourth one, the thorn bush, is the one that responds and says, yes, I'll be your king, and then with all these conditions. Second example, also in Sefer Shoftim. In the 16th chapter of Shoftim, in the famous scene of Shimshon and Delilah, three times Shimshon lies to Delilah as to what the source of his strength is, whether it's using new chains or whether putting his hair into this loom, whatever it may be, until finally on the fourth time he answers. This is, again, a common vehicle, a common device used in Tanakh, Shlosha V'Arba'a. Famously, Yair Zakovich at Hebrew University did his doctoral dissertation on it, Al-Shlosha Ve'al-Arba'a, two very weighty volumes. And it's something that can really be discovered in many, many places in Tanakh. It is very clear here, because Shmuel is called to three times, and each time he does not know who is speaking to him and what he's supposed to do. And on the fourth time, because Eli has clued him in, he's given, and we have a resolution to the problem, as he is now in communication with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one piece of the narrative structure here, which is significant. Taking a look back before we go further into the prophecy itself, we look at Perek, Pasuk Bet and Gimel. And you see that Bet and Gimel, which highlight the difference between Eli and Shmuel, also are presented in a chiastic fashion, in which the first part of a sentence is then followed by a second part of a sentence, which is then mirrored by the first part of the next sentence, and then the earlier part of the first sentence is mirrored by the end. In other words, a structure we would call ABBA. Take a look at Pasuk Bet. The focus is on Eli. And then we're told about his eyes, that his eyes aren't working. In the beginning of the next Pasuk, we're told again about light, but here the light is, in apposition, is successful. It has not yet gone out. And then we are told about Shmuel. And what that does is it highlights the issue of light and seeing. And of course, we are talking here about the inauguration of a Navi, of a prophet who is also a seer, as we will see in Perek Tet, famously in Pasuk Tet. So in any case, two little structural devices that happen in our Perek that are very critical. There is yet a third one, and here's probably a good time to point it out about the two Shmuels, is that reading this parak, we would easily come to the conclusion that that the focus of the parak is on the substance of the prophecy, which is going to confirm that which we already know, that the house of Eli is going to fall, and that Hashem is going to destroy Eli, Eli's household, as being the Kohanim of Hashem. But if we take a look at it, we'll see another device coursing through the parak. A long, long time ago, the Rishonim already noticed that the prevalence of particular words or phrases in a given parsha gives us a clue as to what that parsha is about. But it took until really the 19th or 20th century until this particular device was given a form or a phrase. Since it was sort of discovered or named in Germany, the word that was given was Leitwort, or a key word. We call it in Hebrew Milah Mancha. And the Milah Mancha, if you look through Tanakh, is something that is very, very common. You find in many, many parashot, of the Torah, one word or one particular, usually one word, that appears numerous times, way more than would be expected. And if you look carefully, that word is something that is sort of a one-word synopsis of the parsha. As an example, in the first story of creation, Bereshit Aleph, you take a look and there's a word that shows up seven times. What's that word? Tov. And that's the emblem, that's the banner statement of all of creation. Everything that Hashem sees is good. That Hashem has created, He sees and deems to be good. It's all Tov. In Shmot Lamed Aleph, in the Parsha, at the end of Lamed Aleph, the Parsha about Shabbat, the root, Shin Bet Tav, shows up seven times. Now, one of the things about a Milah Mencha is that with few exceptions, the Milah Mencha will show up seven times or some multiple of seven. One other example, in Psalm 92, which is the Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShabbat, the day of Hashem, Hashem's name shows up seven times. And many, 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 many other examples of this happening. You take a look at our parak and you'll find something curious, that Shmuel's name appears 21 times in this very short parak. And it's intense. And many of the times seem to be superfluous. You could have, for instance, in Pasuk Vav, Vayosef Hashem Kro Od. It doesn't have to repeat what he said. Right? Or Kro Od Shmuel. Vayakum Vayelech Eli. He got up and went to Eli. Why does it have to repeat the name Shmuel again? And many of these times seems to be extra, as if to kind of put that name out there so many times that it helps define the parak. Because this parak is not about the prophecy. This parak is about the inauguration of Shmuel. This parak is about bringing Shmuel into prophecy and having his first nevuah. And it's interesting because it parallels another parasha with somebody who is compared to Shmuel himself several times in Tanakh. In Tehillim, at Sadi Tet, we read the pasuk, Moshe ve'Aaron v'chonav u'Shmuel b'korei Shemo. Shmuel on one hand, Moshe and Aaron on the other. Shmuel and Moshe are compared again in Yirmiyahu, and this comparison between Moshe and Shmuel goes beyond this. After all, both Moshe and Shmuel at an early age were given up by their parents to be raised in royalty. There was a tension that existed between the members of that royalty. In the case of Moshe with Paro, in the case of Shmuel with Chofin Finchas, not to compare them at all, but just to point out that there are certain similarities in the ways that they were raised. Indeed, their names, which are alliterations of each other, Moshe and Shmuel, are both after the vehicle through which they came to the place that they are, Mi Hashem Shi'iltiv or Min Hamayim Mishitihu. And you notice that at the very first significant scene of Moshe's, or the scene of Moshe's inauguration into prophecy, which is Moshe at the Sneh, Moshe at the burning bush, we find that Moshe's name appears in that entire parsha exactly 14 times. As if again to say that although the critical substance of this prophecy is Hashem's promise to redeem Bnei Yisrael, the focus and the real gist of this prophecy is the inauguration of Moshe into Nevuah, which would then explain a curious Midrash Chachamim. By the way, that would explain perhaps why our text eliminated Shmuel, Shmuel every one of the times, because it would throw the count off. And as such, it didn't say that each time he called him, he said Shmuel, Shmuel. It said Shmuel, and then the final time it said Shmuel, Shmuel, because that's really what he said each time. Perhaps, I'm just throwing it out as a suggestion. However, this will explain a curious Midrash Chachamim. Chachamim, in Midrash Rabbah, in Shmot Rabbah, comment on the Pasuk, Vayomar Anochi Adonai Elohei Avicha, Elohei Avraham Elohei Yitzchak Elohei Yaakov, that Hashem came to Moshe, and the first thing he said to him was, I am the God of your father. And then he said, I am the God of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Chachamim were surprised why he says the God of your father. And they say as follows, that when Hashem first called to Moshe, Moshe was Tiron l'Nevuah. He was a rookie in Nevuah. And Hashem said, if I come to him with the real voice, he's going to get scared. If I come to him with a soft voice, he's going to think Nevuah is not a big deal. What will I do? I'll come to him in his father's voice. And he called him, Moshe, Moshe. Hashem responded, said, Abba. And Hashem responded, I'm not Abba, I am the God of your father. And he goes from there. Where did Chachamim get this from? I'd like to suggest they got it from the comparison between Paragimel Dalet of Shmot and Paragimel of Sefer Shmuel, in which Moshe's inauguration is very much like Shmuel's. And in Shmuel's inauguration, it is clear from the text that the voice he heard was the voice of his father figure, meaning Eli, And that is the voice that he is responding to until finally realizes Hashem. So perhaps in the Midrash, Chachamim said that that's exactly what happened to Moshe in the parallel passage. All right, let's see the Nevuah itself. Pasuk Yod Aleph. Vayomer Adonai El Shmuel, Hinei Anochi Oseh Devar BiYisrael, Asher Kol Shom'ot Etzilana Shtei Oznav. I'm going to do something that anybody who hears it, his ears will ring. It's going to shock people so much. Vayomer Hu Akim El Eli Et Kol Asher Dibarti El Beito, Hachel V'chalei. I'm going to fulfill towards Eli everything that I promised from beginning to end, meaning I'm going to end them. V'gadti lo, I've already told him, Ki Shofet Ani Et Beito Adolam. I'm going to judge his household forever. Meaning that they're never going to be able to come back. Ba'avon asher yada, ki mekalim lahem banav lochi avam. Why is Eli going to be hurt? Because of the sin. And he knew that people are cursing his sons, and he did not stop them. Meaning that his sons are causing people to curse his family, and to curse the Mikdash, the Mishkan, and his family, and he didn't do anything to stop them. V'lachein ishbati levet Eli. And therefore I have taken an oath, imit kaper avon beit Eli bezevach of minchar olam. Now, it's important to note that that normally when we make an oath, when you read in Masachet Shavuot about an oath, you read that a person takes an oath, I swear, and it's by Hashem's name, whatever it is, that I will do X, or that I didn't do X, whatever it may be. However, in Tanakh, the wording is different. In Tanakh, the way that an oath is worded is, I take an oath that if, and you repeat the opposite of what you're swearing to, and you leave blank, blank, blank. As if to say, for instance, if I'm taking an oath that I'll show up tomorrow, the way I would say it would be, I'm taking an oath that if I don't show up tomorrow, and then we leave the rest blank, because the rest would be something that we really don't want to say and something that we don't want to have expressed, but that's the way that it's presented. So how does Hashem say it here? He says, "Im itkaver avon beit itkaper avon beit Eli, bezavach mincha'ar olam." I'm taking an oath if the house of Eli will find any kapara with korbanot, forever, meaning that they will not get any kapara. That is a passage which is taken by two descendants of Eli, which I mentioned in the previous podcast, Abai and Rava, to say that, aha, it can't be redeemed through Zevach HaMincha, but it can be atoned for with Torah or Torah and Chesed. That's the substance of the Nevuah. Vayishkav Shmuel al haboker, vayiftach et daltot beit Adonai, u'shmuel yareh mehagidat hamara el Eli. So Shmuel lay till the morning, and he opened up the doors of the Mikdash, that's his job, the Shkan, and he was afraid to tell Eli what he saw. Now, Eli understands. The last time he saw Shmuel, or the last time he was with Shmuel, he sent Shmuel back to his bed to respond to Hashem. Something had to have happened. V'kray Eli et Shmuel, v'yomer Shmuel b'ni, v'yomer hineni. So Shmuel called him and said, my son, again, he realizes Shmuel's either hasn't heard something or he's heard something which is displeasing. Shmuel has not had an exciting experience that he comes to tell Eli. So he says to him, B'ni, again to comfort him. And Shmuel says, Hinani. So he said, what did Hashem speak to you, say to you? Don't hide anything from me. This is a phrase which we'll touch on later on Shmuel, which is a common oath phrase only in Shmuel Malachim. This is what Hashem will do to you, and this is what Hashem will add. If you hide anything from me, meaning he was making him taking an oath to the fact that he will not hide anything from him. So Shmuel told him everything. He didn't hide. He didn't lie about it. He didn't tell him anything different. And what was Eli's reaction? He said, Hashem, whatever is good in his eyes, that's what he will do. In other words, Eli accepted the Nevuah. Vayigdal Shmuel, and now we get the epilogue to the Nevuah, and Shmuel grew up, v'Adonai haya imo, v'lepim called varav arza. And Hashem was with him, and none of his words fell to the ground, which means all of his haftachot, all of his promises were kept, which is foreshadowing to what's going to happen in the next chapter, which is going to be the beginning of the destruction of Beit Eli. Vayeda kol Yisrael midan v'ad ber shava kineman Shmuel and avi l'Adonai. And everybody knew midan v'ad ber shava, Dan in the north, ber shava in the south is the archetypical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. That everybody knew that Shmuel was a trusted prophet of Hashem. Vayosef Adonai lehira'o b'shiloh, and now Hashem continued to appear in Shiloh. Kinigla Adonai el Shmuel b'shiloh b'dvar Adonai, because Hashem had already appeared. Meaning, once that there was already a nevuah to Shmuel in Shiloh, Then he continued to have nevuah. There's more nevuah happening. Hashem's spirit is more felt. And suddenly we have an entire revolution that has taken place from the beginning of our parak. Udvar Hashem, haya yakar b'imim ahem, ein chazon nifratz, to kinigla Adonai Shmuel b'shilo b'dvar Adonai. That Hashem has now become manifest in Shiloh, and people are, then the spirit of Hashem is being felt there. Everyone should have a wonderful day. We'll continue with Perek Dalet in the next podcast.